Boundless Spirit, pushing the limits of talk radio with Charlene Springer.
Boundless Spirit Radio with Charlene Springer. And wow, we've got an incredible show for you today. One of our guests that we love to have on, one of my favorite people, Ole Damgaard. And for those of you who are new to Ole, you know, he's one of the most dedicated people that I've come across in a long time. And, you know, he's coming from 30 years of experience in researching so many global conspiracies. And, you know, he is an author, he is an investigator, he is a musician, he is a former journalist, and he is an incredible international speaker speaking all over the world. They invite him to come. They want you there all the time, Ole. And, you know, he's also the winner of the Prague Peace Prize and was nominated for the Lighthouse Award. And he actually got adopted into the Apache Nation. Welcome, Ole Damgaard.
Thank you so much.
That is awesome. So you are now an official Apache.
I should be able to say something in Apache now. Dekote, I think it is when you say hello in Apache. But yes, I am. And that is one of the things I feel the most proud of. And I'm also very happy to have that in the presentation of myself, because that makes it's a really good starting point for talking about this tribe that has had being put in such horrific situations and so on the reservation, that it really needs to be exposed what is going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we saw all the cases of that, what was going on in the United States, huh? With the oil, black snake.
Yeah, that's one thing, but also it's like, it seems like the Apache Nation, since their gene pool is so clear, so clean over hundreds and hundreds, I would say almost thousands of years, that they've been used as guinea pigs for genetic experiments. And the reservation has been sprayed with Agent Orange. They found, I don't know, not so long ago, they found like two or three football fields, big areas where they had buried like 20 barrels deep or more with massive big oil drums of Agent Orange, which is an extremely poisonous thing that is, it comes from, I think it's from the Roundup production. Mm-hmm. And Monsanto, but it's the one that was used in Vietnam to de-leaf all the plants, but also to cause absolute mayhem among the population. So, and it's like my friend Shush, who is the one, I recently interviewed him on my own podcast called Light on Conspiracies. And he himself, just by being in touch with one of these drums, has now been infected. And as far as they know, there's no cure for these. The chemicals are so intense. And in the tribe, they have even like a part of the tribe that they call the Orange Tribe, because these are the people that have been born with all types of weird physical handicaps. And also there's even individuals that have been born there with no genitals, and it's sort of like a mix between male and female, and it's absolutely horrific.
Mm. What part of the United States is this? Where is the bulk of the Apache?
The Apache, it's not a very big tribe anymore, and it's in Arizona, New Mexico, but Arizona is the Apache Nation is located in Arizona, and with the center, I think, in San Carlos, the San Carlos Reservation.
Mm. That's incredible stuff.
But I tell you, I must share something, because I had this amazing interview with Shush, and Shushu, it actually means bear. It's the name for bear. And he told me amazing stuff because I asked everything from, you know, children, traditions, language, body language, all of these things that are so different from different nations and nationalities and languages. And one of the things he said was that there are no swear words in Apache. There are no, what do you call it? Negative words, derogatory words. There are no what you can. He says you can be sneaky like the coyote, but there's nothing like you MF or you're full of BS or whatever. There's no such words. And also, they have as a rule to when a conversation is there, if there's nothing for you to add to the conversation, you just stay quiet. If there's nothing that you can add to amplify the effect in a positive way, you don't say anything. And I just thought it was amazing. We were talking about body language as well. And I asked, I said, so from me being where I come from and so on, is there anything I can do against an Apache that is really rude without meaning it? And he said, yeah, look somebody in the eyes. I said, what? Yeah, that is very impolite to do that. And he said that is because it's just like in nature, you know, like if you stare at an animal, that animal will be feeling threatened and he said it's the same if you're with a friend or if you're with an enemy, you will keep them under observation at all times, but never with a friend. And so he says the way to show that you trust someone is not to look at them, to look down. And he said, for instance, when he's with his mother or so on, he never looks her in the eyes. He always looks down, sort of being humble. Mm-hmm. And I said, but oh my God, so many misunderstandings over these centuries of, you know, shady-eyed native Indians, and you can't trust them, you know. I'm sure that this is one of the reasons, just this different tradition. So I think it's very important to learn about these things so that when we meet, we understand what's going on.
And we don't think they're shady, because they do keep a lot of, you know, some of the movies that you saw, they keep their heads down. They're like, okay, head down. And that we interpret it as something totally different.
Exactly. And then I asked about humor and jokes and also body language. And one of the things with words he said was that many, you know, like things like certificate or license or registration, these type of things, the Apaches don't know what to say because it's so not natural, you know. So they say this thing that the white man wants for me to be able to do what I'm supposed to be able to do anyway, go fishing or something like that. That they have to do it like this, speak around in Apache to be able to understand what's going on. And I also asked, since the body language and so is so different. And also this with jokes and so on. So I said, so how can you tell that an Apache is really happy? And he said, a really happy Apache you can spot because he's very stoic. He's very silent. He knows, he looks very proud and stoic. And I said, but how does that make him very happy? How do you get? No, because he then knows he's totally proud of where he is. He knows his direction in life. He's in total balance and harmony with everything. And so he's stoic. And I thought, Well, fair enough. Fair enough.
We got it all wrong.
I just think it's really interesting, because I remember I was in Arizona years ago, and on a Greyhound bus I was sitting next to an Apache, a young man, and there was this thing when I said something to him, there was this delay, and then he answered, and then I answered right away, and then delay, and then he answered, and I thought, maybe he doesn't like me, but I didn't get that feeling. So I asked Shush about it, and he said, no, it shows respect. You say something, he will listen, he will go through it, he will see if he can add something to it of value, then he answers. So there's this delay instead of just like blah, 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 like many of us do. There's like this, hang on, I will listen. Okay, can I add anything of value? Yes, okay, this. So that's why there's that delay. I thought that was really interesting as well. Anyway. Ah,
beautiful. So there's thoughtfulness with everything they say.
The thing, yeah, exactly. And also this thing about them being so cruel and so horrible and so on. I mean, they have that from the Indian Wars, and especially from when Geronimo was on the warpath. But the thing is, when you look at how what happened down there, every single treaty they were ever given were broken. I mean, not once did we keep our word. Also, when they finally said, okay, fine, we'll go to a reservation, we will do that for the sake of peace. The reservations they were given first were up in the mountains, beautiful areas with trees and rivers and all, you know, like where they could hunt and so on. And then once they were there, and the horses were taken away from them and guns and so on, then suddenly, well, we're just going to move you a little bit more. And then we're just going to move you a little bit more. And then a little bit more. And then in the end, now in San Carlos, it's the worst area ever. It's the driest, the hottest. You can't grow anything. It's just absolutely horrific. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it's been done all over. And also when you... I know this interview wasn't supposed to be about Apaches, but I'm just going to tell you also because when you look at how they were treated and how incredible what they did, I mean, they kept one, let me see here now, 5,000 of the U.S. military, the cavalry, they kept them from, I think, was it 6 months or 3 years? They could not get hold of a little gang of Apaches. I mean, we're talking like children, women, old people, about 300 of them. And the cavalry was 5,000, and they could not track them down until they had Apaches that tracked down Apaches. And then what did the white man do? Thank you very much, being disgusting. They took Geronimo and all of the rest of them, put them on trains to Florida, where they were put in jail and in the swamps, and they died in the hundreds of what was often called broken heart in the death certificates. But not only did they do that, they also took the Apaches that helped to track them down and put them on the same trains. How charming is that? Not.
What's really interesting is I had just come across about the tribe the group of tribes in Florida that stayed in the Everglades, the Somalis, and I had never heard that story before. So I just recently came across, and that would make sense that the Apache, because again, in that space, they couldn't get to them because they knew, you know, they knew the Everglades. Incredible story.
No, but the thing was, they were put in the worst possible area just to get rid of them, and as far away from their home country as possible, because you can't get much further away from Arizona than Everglades and Florida.
The Miccosukee tribe, that was the other name, yeah.
Then they were kept down there in a fortress, like a prison fortress, but also in these awful areas. And then after years in prison there, they were brought to Fort Sill in Oklahoma, where finally they were getting some kind of life together. But while in Florida and so on, many of their kids was taken away, you know, put in foster care, in these schools and so on, where there were so many of them dying, and they were just, they did everything they could to destroy their culture, the language was banned, everything. So nothing to be proud of if you're one of us. But I must say, I didn't do it, so I'm not going to carry any guilt of that. But So here we are, Charlene. What would you like to talk about?
We needed to hear this part because it has crossed my radar in the last month about the ones in Florida and as you talked about them forcing them to go to school and you know some dying out from the kids. So it has crossed my path. So thank you. And again, people can find this interview, which I'm sure it's a delightful interview. I have to look for it myself on lightonconspiracies.com. Oli has his podcast there. And that interview with Shoops is available, yes. So thank you. So as we get back to this side of the world again, the U.S. of A, such an incredible nation, really, of so many interesting things. We've had what happened in Charleston, South Carolina, the drive-by, the demonstrations, etc. We've had what happened in Spain. So what's going on in the world, Ole?
It's nothing new. It's exactly the same, following the same template, all being coordinated together, like we've spoken about several times. Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that what we're seeing is, let me say it like this. Some years ago, there was what was called the Arab Spring in North Africa. And it was called the Green Revolutions, where the population of these countries, through Facebook actually, were organized into different uprisings and making revolution, getting rid of the people that were in the top power positions and replacing them with the ones chosen by the people. At least that's the official story. Mm-hmm. But when you start looking into these things, we're back to the usual suspects again. You know, dear old CIA is right there among others of these agencies. Mossad is very often in the background as well, going totally hand in hand. And so when you see that these were actually orchestrated revolutions, not revolutions by the people, but organized takeovers of power, using a revolution as a disguise. But what was actually happening was that the person in power was being replaced by a puppet for the New World Order, somebody that they can control. Then it moved on to the Ukraine, where the color code was orange, where they did more or less the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And then I would suggest that what we're seeing since 2016 is the purple, pink or purple revolution. And this is totally funded by George Soros in an attempt to destabilize the Western world. And you will see that this color code, the purple color code, just comes through again and again and again and again. Purple or pink, dark pink. And so it's everything from, you know, the knife from the attackers at the London Bridge. The knives themselves were purple. There were there's a purple color code now for the funeral for this woman in Charlottesville.
Heather.
Heather, yeah. You had there was a very purple balloons at the Ariana Grande concert, also afterwards at the funerals, purple. The purple thing just keeps going on. And I do believe that the reason why they use these color codes is that it's a very simple way of communicating with their own members all over the world, meaning that they don't have to send out messages for each and every operation to inform everyone. The only thing that they need is like, this is the color. Every time it appears as in a certain way, you know, this is ours and we're in total control. That is my interpretation of this color code thing.
What's interesting is that you actually see like newscasters wearing the purple ties now too.
I did not know that, but this is when you look at the ownership of the media in the US, we're down to less than six owners of all media, and many of the big publishing houses, radio set, you name it, all of it owned by the very few people that are also trying to do the exact thing here, which is called the New World Order. So it will come through, and you will I can guarantee you that these colors, when they use, if they don't use these purple ties or whatever it is you're talking about every day, then the days they will be using it, they will have happened certain things, and they will be reporting about certain things that is according to this agenda. At least that was my suggestion.
I've actually seen that, because it was there was, you know, a group, sometimes you'd see the whole group, especially after a disaster, most of them wearing it. And it was a friend of mine that actually brought it to my attention. And the other day I was looking at another interview and the guy had a purple tie on. I'm like, that's interesting. And when I listened to what he was talking about, I'm like, okay, this is, again, trying to get people of color to be up in arms about, you know, the whole Charleston thing.
Charlottesville?
Charlottesville, sorry, yes.
Yeah, exactly. It is, and this will not be a discreet little color in one corner. It is smack right in your face, very strong color codes, mm-hmm. and so on. So every time you see it, I would suggest it would be a good idea to just, you know, be aware of what is being said now, who is saying it, what are they trying to get us to believe, and who benefits from us believing it. So I believe what has been going on since maybe late 2016 and onwards is this purple color code. And I call it the Eurospring, just like it was the Arab Spring. I call it the Eurospring. But now we're coming, it's even, I think, because we messed it up so much for them that there's been different delays. But I think the idea was to destabilize Europe during the spring and then go into a more direct attack against Russia in October, this very October here, all of it in a coordinated attack. So here, what they've done here in Europe is that they always use these old Roman tactics, problem, reaction, solution. You know, the elite few that are extremely few, the only way they can control us is through fear. So they need to create an outer threat, a boogeyman outside that we believe is the threat. Or this can be anything from a virus scare to a bomb scare to an alleged terror attack or anything like that. The reason they want or they do this is to get us in an emotional reaction where we will go like, oh my God, we need protection. And then we will turn towards the ones that we are there to protect us, we believe, saying, please, please help us, not understanding that it's actually them who have created the problem. And then they will then serve us the solution, problem, reaction, solution. And the solution is something we would never, ever have accepted had it not been for the problem. So this is very important to be aware of, problem, reaction, solution.
That's Hegelian dialectic, man.
That is the exact one. That is the exact one. And in the U.S., what they're trying there is mostly mass shootings, because that's the only nation where the population is armed. So they're trying to make the weapon be the problem, so that the solution would be to get rid of the weapons, not to get added mental health or whatever, but to get rid of the weapons. But in Europe, it's a totally different situation. They cannot cause revolutions here because people are too well fed and too lazy and too laid back. You know, they're not desperate in any way. So, and there's no arms, so mass shootings are more or less not seen here. So what is used here instead are alleged terror attacks. And through these terror attacks, they try to destabilize these countries, making us believe that there is this Muslim world threat that is trying to take over the world. And we need to defend ourselves And the way to defend ourselves against these threats are to have CCTV cameras everywhere, body scanners, surveillance, robocops in the street, tanks, you name it, military people everywhere. And so when you look at what has been going on in Europe, you will see that it is the exact same NATO countries where it's going around in a circle, around and round and round. And it's going from the exact same NATO countries to the often the exact same police districts as well, meaning that it's the exact same few people they need to control when these operations are carried out. And then I'll add another one for you, is the reason why they started to use vehicles. They started in Nice more or less a year ago. And since then, there's been a whole long line of vehicle attacks. I'm sure you've noticed. Trucks, vans, cars, many rental cars and rental vans that have been carrying these things out. And the reason for that is back to problem, reaction, solution. The vehicle is now becoming the problem to freak us out so that we ask for the solution. And the solution are these new smart cars, driverless autonomous cars, that will then also enter into the next stage in their plan, which are the smart cities, where everything is digitalized, everything is remotely controlled, everything is in their hands for our protection. So now, recently, just a few days ago, I found out why they started to use rental cars and rental vans. And now England is saying that now, for your protection, we need to start to make make it more difficult to rent cars so that terrorists can't do it. So we need to raise all of these different demands and the prices and everything for your protection. But it's never for our protection. It's always we're the ones losing every single time. So this is what I believe is going on at the moment here in Europe and in the US.
Okay.
So you want to go to Charlottesville?
Okay, so we can, so what did you end with? Sorry, the power did come back on, so we had the switch. So you have that little pause moment in between there. So so you finished talking about, what did you just finish? I didn't hear.
I said about the reason why they are using rental vans in these latest attacks is that now they are making that a problem as well. So now the authorities in England are starting to talk about that we need to raise the qualifications to be able to rent a car. We need to raise prices. We need to make the security all for your safety, all for your security. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now what do you see happen when you compare what's happened in Europe to what's happening in the United States? How is the United States so different, especially after what happened in Charlottesville?
The agenda is different for different areas of the world. And the U.S., I think they want to, when I say they, I mean the people behind the New World Order. According to their own agenda that you can read about in books by David Rockefeller and Stravinsky, but where they talk about the whole world as a chessboard. And one of the things that you can also see Agenda 21 and Agenda 30, where it's very out in the open what the big plan is. And it seems like they want to turn the U.S. into more or less a natural park, you know, move the center of power to China and then get rid of most of us and use these areas as a natural park, more or less. So what they're trying to do is destroy the U.S., to totally destroy by divide and conquer and many other attacks. Mm-hmm. So when you look at Charlottesville, when you make a bomb, you need specific chemicals and you mix them in a certain way with things very opposing to each other, chemicals and so on. And then once that's done, the only thing needed for an explosion is a small little spark. And when you look at how this whole thing was created, with buses, there were multiple buses being driven in, where people, there were at least six light gray buses being observed that came into Charlottesville, with people getting off, some of them with KKK t-shirts, other people with Black Lives Matter t-shirts, I think also the Antifa, some of the Antifa, and some with almost riot gear, coming off the same buses, identical buses from the same rental company. So I ask you, what are we seeing there? I mean, how is that a natural way that the KKK and Black Lives Matter would come on the exact same buses, even seen sitting at the same tables talking to each other before the riots? Or are we seeing something being staged here? And there's one company that I want to point out that it's called Crowds on Demand. Crowdsondemand.com, very interesting company, because not only nowadays can you rent crisis actors, pyrotechnics, all of these things in one sort of package, but you can also get yourself a riot if you want, or a rally, or if you failed the pop star or politician, if you want to be popular, we can get your crowd. And so you, with this company, they say that they can deliver a crowd anywhere in the U.S., anything you want, rally, protests, supporters, fans, we'll deliver. And this company is based in L.A., but they said that they have delivered to all over the U.S. I'm sure they can do this abroad as well if the money is there for transport, no problem. And so also they're bragging on their website, really go through and see what they're saying. They say more or less, we can achieve anything. We can even help you with a script depending on what it is you want to achieve.
You're kidding me. A script also? Wow.
Yeah, we can help you with, you know, script the whole thing and so on. So whatever you need, we can do. And this company actually had a gathering for a rally in Charlotte, but that's Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So not Charlottesville. So when I saw that, I thought, whoa, this could be a trap, you know, to try and get someone and like myself to go into and say, oh, look at them, they're doing this. And then they would then say, no, it was Charlotte, North Carolina, not Charlottesville in Virginia. But the thing is, it's only a four-hour drive. So what makes it impossible for the group and the crowd to gather in Charlotte, North Carolina, get on these buses, and then drive up to Charlottesville, where they're handed out T-shirts, all of the equipment, all the different signs and posters, everything that is needed, and then they arrive to Charlottesville, everybody gets off, have a little coffee first, and then, okay, let's go kill each other. And action.
Well, I think what was interesting was I looked at parts of it, and there was a part where everyone was chanting. So different people were chanting different things. And it actually felt like I was watching, you know, for the Oscars, they do that show where the production number. And this is what it felt like, a production number, because people were singing together, and then the other group sang after this first group sang, and then the other group sang, and I'm like, oh my God, this is like a production. What's going on here? So it didn't feel, how you'd say, organic. It felt very orchestrated, that part of it that I saw. Yeah.
And I would suggest that you might be spot on. Because I would also say, I would go into some details here, but what I would suggest is what we're looking here is a production, a film of terror production. It's the terror that they want to spread out there. Okay, so Charlottesville, where is Charlottesville? Well, it's in the U.S. Yeah, but it's more than that. Charlottesville is in Virginia, and it's only a stone's throw away from the White House in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. It is only just a stone's throw away from the headquarters of the CIA in Langley. It is also just a stone's throw away from the Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, where the Bilderberg group had their meeting just a few months ago on the 1st of June. They've been there. That's the only place in the world this Bilderberg group has been more than once. So when you look at it, it's sort of the backyard for these bad boys to play in. Mm-hmm.
So this was the perfect spot then.
Well, it was, at least it was handy, because maybe they wanted to be back before dinner, you know, some of the these people, if this was such a thing. But let's have a look. So when you look at Charlottesville, it's there's where this happened. It is the crossing, the intersection between Water Street, which is sort of like a normal sized street with two lanes in both directions, and then 4th Street, which is it's a narrow. I mean, you can two cars can pass each other, but that's about it. And when you look at where this crowd was, it said that they were on their way to this big rally, but the direction they're walking is not actually in that direction. It's you would have taken another way, I would suggest, for that big crowd to go if you were heading to that direction. But here, this is exactly where they were. And so when the official story is that this young man was like an extremist, right extremist, and he got very upset with all of these things. So he took his car, Ohio plated, a Dodge Challenger from 2010, and went down this 4th Street. And then when he came to the crowd, he, instead of stopping, he just stepped on it and went straight into the crowd, killing one woman, this Heather, and injuring a lot of other people. But what he did was he drove straight up in the back of a car in front of him. It was a silver colored car with a black roof, and then that car bumped into the car in front of that one. So it was like three vehicles involved. And the first vehicle was a maroon van that was standing on the pedestrian crossing almost in this intersection. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as this happened, he reversed in full speed, I mean really fast, straight back up 4th Street and disappeared. And then it seems like he was driving around with half of the front of the car hanging, dangling next to the car for almost an hour before he was arrested. There's even footage of him, video footage, where he's driving down the street, there's police on the pavement, and nobody's reacting, even though half of the car is sort of hanging to the side. So,
and if I remember correctly, it was all, he had tinted windows too, no?
It was, they're super tinted. That was the mm-hmm. first thing I reacted. They're very, very dark. And this is an Ohio plated car. So from the sides, you can see absolutely nothing and very little in from the front window. So I would highly question if a car like that with these type of tinted windows are even legal. Anyway, so what happened also was that there was a drone that was for some reason filming this exact intersection, this crossing here, but it was filming it, it's totally stable camera, but it was filming in an angle so that you could, had it been just slightly different, you would have seen the car ram into the car in front of it, and then. But here, the roof of the houses are covering it exactly, so the only thing you can see is that maroon van slowly being moved forward into the crowd. So actually, you can't see anything of it. And then once you start looking, I mean, the thing is, for someone like me, is when something like this happened. The official story is there. So it's up for me to say, okay, does the evidence support the official story, or did something else go on? Because either we're looking at something that happened naturally, a horrific event, or we're looking at a staged event. And if it is staged, then you have to find out who did it, why did they do it, who benefited, and what are they up to now? So from my perspective, what I always look at is when these things are carried out, where are they carried out? Because to be able to do a thing like this, you need to be able to shut off the streets in all directions so that you can control the parameters, all parameters. You also need access to buildings that are empty, you know, like libraries, theaters, parking houses, especially parking houses also, where you can hide the vehicles inside it. You can hide big crowds. You can hide makeup artists, you know, people that has to do with fire, pyrotechnics or explosives, all of that, so that everything can be prepared. Every normal day just goes on outside the normal daily life. Nobody notices. And then when it's time, you can just close off street, and then within a few minutes, you just the whole team, your whole team can move out into the street and action, background action and action. And within 10, 15 minutes, the whole thing can be pulled off and nobody will notice what actually happened. So we look here, was there a library nearby where this could be done? Because very often they use these libraries because they have everything, you know, toilets, catering facilities, also where you can do makeup, big open spaces and so on. There was no library, but right in the intersection here, Water Street, 4th Street, is a big, very big parking garage. With several levels where you can park. And that is also where some of the footage is taken, some of this perfect footage where you see people on being killed by the car and so on, perfectly sharp. I mean, somebody has been standing there waiting with the cameras focused, everything and action and click, 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 like that. You never have somebody hear the bang and then go out the window and manage to do that while the impact is still, when the vehicles are still moving. Mm-hmm. So, but that's from the exact same angle. And the exit from that could have like 100, 200 people in there and just say, and now go. So we look from above as well, and you will see that there's lots of people right in the intersection, but absolutely no one in the other, you know, outside this small little area, totally empty streets, and also multiple vehicles in all four directions that are blocking off the area. There's also, if you continue 4th Street down, there's a underpass, where on some still photos you can see on the other side of the underpass, there are these like metal barriers like they use at rock concerts that would also block that off. But outside where the footage can be seen, you can also see if you go Water Street down, there is a right outside the footage area, there's a sharp bend, meaning that on the other side of that bend, you could very easily shut that street off as well, and it would not be visible in this footage. So perfect area. And then right across the street from the parking garage, there's a theater. So you have the possibilities for, you know, like suites for artists and makeup facility, everything there, if you are not bringing it. But mostly these people have their own like grip trucks, you know, these white trucks that are used for film sets where you just open up and there's everything from wardrobe in one, there's lighting and electricity cables in another one, a whole makeup studio inside in a second one, a third one and so on. That's how they do it.
That's crazy. So,
it's a film production. It's a film. You wouldn't react if somebody said, well, they were filming a Coca-Cola commercial. Nobody would react. But it's just because we're being served that this is a terror attack, then your brain just stops working. But we're looking at the exact same thing.
For me, what was really interesting was I saw the footage of the car driving by that someone took on their cell phone. And what was interesting is, you know, the person saying, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, he just hit someone. And you see the car reverse, but you don't hear him yelling anyone to stop that car, or I didn't see anyone trying to jump the car. And everyone was just kind of with their cameras up, but not really saying anything. And I'm like, that's just a very different response. I think I would respond totally differently. And you know, I would have been running down the car, you know, so that felt funny. So there are certain things, especially when you see early footage, I recognize that, you know, you want the early footage because then you'll see all the mistakes.
This is it. It will be deleted from YouTube right away. I mean, this is the thing. You have to download it so fast nowadays because otherwise they take it down. But it's very interesting what you're saying. It's especially there's especially one video that starts filming down, and you can see just the street, and then you see the car passes. And somebody's screaming when the car passes, just like if somebody had been hit, but absolutely nothing has happened yet. There's another 100 yards down to the crowd. So that, I tell you, that sound has been manipulated. They've added these screams afterwards. Then you see there's different still photos. There's one photo where the car is standing. You can see the brake lights on. You can also see the crowd in front of it is trying to run to the different directions, but there's hardly anyone on the sides. All of them are down in like one big crowd. But when you look at that photo, you will see, if you zoom in really close, you can even see the pattern on the tires, meaning that the car is actually standing still. You can also see the exhaust from the car that is going downwards, not the way it would be if it was moving forward. So, and also the brake lights on, which they are not on the video. So I tell you, that photo was, it's a still photo taken.
That was a staged one.
That's a staged photo. Then you have, if you look at the license, the vehicle registration, it is, it's a Dodge Challenger from 2010. And the it says color unknown in the registration form. But anyway, the license plate is GVF1111. And it is a very strange number. And very often in these false flag operations, they send messages with things like license plates and banners in the background or stickers and as part of a PSYOP. So the thing is, it's a very unusual number for the license plate. But at the same time, when this man, his name is James Alex Fields, the guy who's been accused of having done it, a young guy, when they interview his mother, they film her in, I think it's her home in Ohio, and she's in the garage. She's just got out of the car. She's in a wheelchair, and they make very sure. They're very aware of filming the back of the car, of her car, and the license plate on her car is GVF1122. So one Dodge with GVF1111 and another one, a Hyundai with GVF1122. So what does that mean? And I have no idea, but I'm looking into it. And there's one satellite company called GVF that were part of, you know, there was a lot of reporting going on with a missing plane called MH340 or something like that.
And Malaysian?
Yeah, and this company, GVF, they were part of giving, they said that they had digitally traced this plane and how it disappeared and so on. So I don't know if that is the GVF they're talking to, and maybe 1111 stands for either numerology or Masonic things, or if it's a date, it could be the 11th of November, and then GVF1122 could be the 22nd of November, which is when Kennedy was killed. So it's a very, I don't know.
MH370 was the number of the plane.
Thank you. That's the one. Yeah. That's the one. And so when you look at the vehicle registration information here, it says that the car has a sunroof. But the car that we see driving through the crowd does not have a sunroof. Also, the car that is found afterwards, where the guy is being arrested and so on, it's a slightly different colors, and it got dark stripes down the hood. The car that hit into the crowd have no stripes. And then you have the color around the headlights on the car that hit the crowd is silver colored, aluminum colored. But the car that is on the Facebook page of this young guy, where it says that this is the car, that has the same color as the rest of the car around the headlights. And the same with the car that it was found of when he was arrested. At least two different vehicles, that I can guarantee you. And so also, when you compare the photos of the car from the arrest and the car when he reverses out of the crowd, you will see that the tinting is different on the windows, just like you mentioned, but also where the rear mirror is located in a car, that is different as well. It's not the same vehicle. And then when you see that the car is reversing, I mean, very fast, you know, when he's leaving the area, that is not like anyone can drive like that. This, it looks a lot like a professional driver, somebody, you know, a former bodyguard or somebody that's been trained by any of these alphabet agencies as a part of their training. He drives very accurate and very fast, straight backwards. And then when he reverses, you will see that there's a lot of things hanging, dangling in front of him, the bumper and so on. But there's a wire attached to it. If you go frame by frame, you will see there's a wire attached to that thing. And there is no wire on a normal car like that when it comes to the bumper. This is a wire that is at least a yard long, like 3 feet, at no more, 3-4 feet long, that is attached to the front of the car and to the bumper that is hanging. And then you have this other thing with all these shoes. Do you know the shoes? Have we talked about
those? The Nike? Yeah.
Yeah, but not only the Nike, but when more or less all of these alleged terror attacks happen all over the world, when they're staged, one of the things you will find is that many of the victims or people that are there will have one shoe off, one or two shoes off. There will be shoes all over the place, very often Nike, like you said. And I found out that the reason for that is that it's in the Freemasonic rituals, because there's always this dark agenda behind or involved as well in these sacrifices, the way they see them. And when a new member goes through different rituals in the Freemasonic ceremonies, they have to take off one shoe and then pull up one of their trousers leg. That shows that individual is doing it voluntarily. When they take off two shoes, it shows homage to the sacred space. And I believe this is one of these hidden messages, once again, to the rest of the world, to their own members around the world, saying, our operation, don't worry, we're in control. And so you will see these, and it's always trainers, more or less all of them, Nike trainers, all over the place. It's just everywhere. And
like perfect product placement, no?
Yeah, but not only that, but it's sending out a signal saying it's our operation. And you know, when the Westminster Bridge attack happened on the 22nd of March this year, which I, by the way, predicted 1 month before it happened on international radio, saying exact the next target will be Big Ben. There were shoes there again, all over the place, of these victims with shoes off and shoes very neatly put next to the victims, you know, put together. I mean, right in the center of these photos. But also a man that was very heroically trying to save the life of this policeman they say was killed, allegedly killed in this attack. He was then interviewed in British morning TV the day after, and he came bare feet into the studio because he had lost his shoes during the attack, they said. But I think if you lose your shoes during an attack like that and you're invited to TV, put on another pair. Is that too much to ask for? But he's sitting there bare feet, sending out the message, our operation, we did it, and so on. Even the guy, you know, at the Bataclan massacre, they were inside an ambulance, and there were multiple photos taken over, you know, like several minutes. And the people inside the ambulance was holding up the feet and legs of one of the alleged victims without shoes on, holding it up in the air for minutes while lots of photos being taken of these feet. They're just like these bare feet sticking up. Then you had exactly the same when this police officer is said to have been stabbed, who also they say, oh, he was stabbed by this horrible terrorist. And then what do? They give him CPR, even though they said that he received multiple stab wounds to the chest. I mean, not the best way to deal with it. And the one that was doing it was not the medics or the doctors that was there. It was an MP, an English politician that was there, sitting there with some ketchup on his forehead, looking very dramatic and doing this whole. And while they were doing this, they were at one point, they were holding up his bare feet, this poor dead cop's bare feet. He was not dead at all. That's not what I'm saying. But they're holding up his feet, and there's photos taken almost like a religious painting of where these feet are being held up. And there's three different people around, one of them a woman, looking up on these feet. I'm in the same way that you see these classical church paintings where Jesus is there and everybody is surrounding him, holding this mm-hmm. up. You can almost hear the angel choir in the background. So we go to Charlottesville and shoes everywhere when the
car oh my God.
Is hitting. And then when the car reverses away and is being filmed, you can see the car is going very fast backward. And the last thing you see is the car disappears and one red shoe falls off the front of the car and is left right in the middle of the street. Like a business card, like two, and there you go. In Barcelona, when that happened, we're going to come to that one as well. One of the few photos that are there are some children crying, looking absolutely devastated, running around holding up a red tennis shoe. Or pink, dark pink. It's between pink and purple. That's the only thing they're holding. It's right in the center of the picture and so on. So what is it telling you? Then you have
My question for Barcelona was, I have one quick question, Oli. Doesn't Barcelona have those big metal poles by the Rambla so cars can't go through like that?
The boulders, I'm sure.
But you know the big poles that they have?
Yeah, they're called boulders. But I don't think the way. I'm sure that you can enter in through different areas because normally they come and deliver goods and so on. But I'll get to you that because that is a whole thing on its own. Anyway, also what you will see is when you look at a movie, for instance, and you see that if they need to do some kind of action stunt, you know, with a car that turns over or is flying in the air, the stunt drivers sometimes need to rehearse. So sometimes you can see the skid marks from the rehearsals, so that there will be like three, four different skid marks with the exact same maneuver, and then comes the car and boom, and it just turns over and whatever. Have you seen that when you've seen films sometimes?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So here we have the exact same thing. When you see that the car has, it's especially when you see The footage that is taken from above and to the right, that is from inside the parking house on the other side. And when you look down at it, you will see that there are not skid marks, but when you sort of, when you step on it, almost like a burnout, and you turn around the car, there are these parallel tire tracks going diagonal across 4th Street. No, sorry, 4th Street. Mm-hmm. And also, there's another one, an incredible footage as well, where a guy, I can't remember his name, there's a brilliant guy in the U.S. that walking in the exact steps where this video was taken and just putting it, totally taking it apart. He calls it the Zapruder film of Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. And in it, there's this young guy who is walking down the street. This is like 7 minutes before this whole thing happened, as far as I know, something like that, 7 minutes before it happens. And he's walking down Water Street, which is the crossing street, the bigger street of the two, and filming for no apparent reason. But he's just filming himself and walking around live streaming on YouTube, just talking about the whole thing. But he's actually not filming anything, it seems like, except when he walks down the street, whoop, on up along his side comes this Dodge. And it stops by the stoplight. And he just passes, turns the camera a little, films it, so you can very clearly see that it's that car with tinted windows. Then when he passes it, the car makes some, like, it sounds like a police car, like woo, you know, one of these police sounds, and it's, there's no police car there, so it seems like the sound is coming from inside the Dodge. Anyway, he continues down the street. He crosses and he walks up to 4th Street where the impact is going to happen. This is about 4 or 5 minutes before it happens. Mm. And when he's there, there's no crowd. There's nothing. There's just a few people walking around and so on. But the maroon van is already in position. The maroon van is parked halfway over the pedestrian crossing where it was when the impact happened. And this is for at least 4 or 5 minutes, if not more, before this whole thing that came down. And where did that whole big crowd come from in such a short time? From inside the parking garage, I'm telling you. Anyway, so also, when you see the impact and the different video angles and so on of what happened, you will see that, as far as I can see, there's no driver in the van and there's no driver in the silver-colored car either. These two vehicles are, as far as I can see, empty, just placed there. Also, on the still photo we saw before, where the brake lights and where the car was standing still, where the crowd was running to the sides, you cannot see the other vehicles. There were two vehicles in front of it and a big black pickup parked to the right. You cannot see that in the still photos, but they're there in the video footage. You know, and also this Dodge Challenger has airbags. Why did it not inflate when it just smashed up in the rear of this silver-colored car? He should have had an airbag right in his face so that he could not move at all. But you don't see that. You do not see that.
Huh. Because it is a 2010, so it should.
Yeah. Mm. And also, I've also spoken to people that are doing car windows and so on, and they say that there's some rain sensors and the window wipers are not the same on the two different model cars. So we're definitely looking at least two different cars. And also the car that this man is said to drive around in for, I believe, almost an hour after it happened, he's just driving down the street and with the whole thing is hanging to the side and police, nobody is reacting. And then you have, there's one woman who saw these buses arrive in Charlottesville with all of these different individuals coming off, apparently looking like enemies, but not behaving like it at all until and mm-hmm. action, boom, this thing happened. And she said she was very close to where this impact happened, and they were freaking out. They were trying to get away, but instead of being able to get away, the police were holding them back in the area where they could get hurt. They wouldn't even let children out.
Because I also heard that the police were told to stand down, not to get involved in this.
Yeah, but that's the normal police. I tell you, these individuals that were there in police uniforms stopping them, they were part of the operation. This is not normal police. This is how they do it every single time. All the nice, normal, decent police, firefighters, you name it, are not being used. They are told to stand down, stay away, our operation. They're possibly put, you know, located way far away or at the outer perimeters, protecting the area from normal people getting in there, you know, keeping bystanders outside.
Boundless Spirit goes off the rails. Next up in our members-only segment, the woo-woo hour. Whether it's happening on the planet, off the planet, or inside the planet, host Charlene Springer, expert guests, and you dare to go there in the woo-woo hour.